Our speaker today is also the president of Senior Statesmen of Virginia, and he's talking about the coming retirement crisis, which is probably important to many of us. And I want to read you a little bit about all of the things that our speaker, Rich, has done in his life, at least in his career. Rich is the University of Virginia's Bankers Association Professor Emeritus after teaching investments and corporate finance at the McIntyre School of Commerce for 37 years. He's only 50, so he's very precocious. He has a PhD from the University of Colorado, an MBA from William & Mary, and a BA in political science from California State University at Long Beach. He's authored or co-authored many research papers, books, and monographs on investment and finance topics. In addition to having retired from UVA, Rich retired from the United States Air Force as a colonel. He flew C-130s in Vietnam and was awarded a Distinguished Flying Cross and many other medals and ribbons. He has a CFA charter and has taught investment, 401k, and retirement seminars all over the place. More specifically, in the US, Switzerland, Germany, Japan, Thailand, Afghanistan, and the UK. Rich is president of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia, as I said. He's also on the board of the Center, where we are today, Charlottesville Committee on Foreign Relations, Innisfree, and the University of Virginia Physicians Group, so he keeps busy. Rich, please tell us things.
Thank you for the kind introduction, and thank you all for coming. This is a topic that I have been concerned with for a long period of time and have done seminars on it over the years. The Employee Benefit Research Institute estimates that 43% of workers will run out of money in retirement. So it's an issue that is coming. The shortfall will be $4 trillion, the shortfall of the workers today when they get into retirement. You know, obviously, as you all know, the sources of retirement include 401ks, defined contribution plans, part-time work, IRAs, pensions, real estate, businesses, and others, but that's not going to be sufficient for many of them. So you just showed your age, because what me worry. The other one that I loved as a kid is anyone that is calm in this situation doesn't understand what's going on. And one of my professors at the University of Colorado always said that Americans are like deer. They hear danger and they look up. And they don't see anything moving, so they go back and start eating again. So let's hope that we move beyond that. But let me start with the trouble. As I said, over 40% are going to run out of money. And if you look at folks with no retirement savings, 20%, but it's worse in some of the minority communities, blacks and Hispanics, you also find it worse for females. And the danger there is they tend to live longer and need more money. The other problem that we Americans have is feeling that we're not on track. Perceived to be on track for a successful retirement, 43% is perceived to be on track, which means 57% are not ready for retirement and don't think they're ready. And if you take the minority groups, it's even worse, 75% are not ready, or 72%. And then put on top of that is that as humans, we tend to be overconfident. Psychologists have told us that over the years. But if you look culturally, Americans tend to be even more overconfident than many other cultures. And we tend to be overconfident in our knowledge and abilities, and you see that in people saying, well, I made a great investment, therefore I'm a good investor. Well, you might have been lucky. You might have just happened to time it well. And then to make it even worse, when you think about retirement, and as I said, 43% of Caucasians think they're on track. If you think about it, most people underestimate how much they're going to need in retirement. It turns out that right after retirement, people assume that they're going to drop to 70% or 65 to 70 is what most of the studies have shown of their pre-retirement monies. But it turns out often, initially, it's higher than that. It's higher than that because you start doing the things that you've always wanted to do over time, but never got around to do it. You may take more travel than you ever did before. You may visit the grandkids more and have all those expenses going out there, plus the gifts for them and the like. And so we often find that, at least initially, the expenditures after retirement is about 110% of what it was just prior. It drops off over time because at some point you start telling the grandkids, if you want me to visit, come to my house, and you quit traveling as much. And whether that happens at 80 or 85 or 90 depends on the individual. But we tend to be overconfident, and so that 43% of Caucasians, 25% of African Americans, and 28% of Hispanics, they're probably even farther behind than they think they are. So what is the current situation? So here's what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the current situation. I'm going to talk about whether we can count on Social Security. And when I do seminars for companies for trying to encourage their workers to do 401ks and trying to help them figure out how to do their 401k investments, I'll often ask how many folks think that Social Security will be there when they're ready to retire. I get no hands, none. Unless the person is over 50. Then they say, well, yeah, it'll be there. So what is the situation? Well, the situation is that in 2034, we expect that we'll run out of the trust fund, which means that the only monies that will be going to Social Security are the current workers. And what this estimate today is, unless we make some adjustment, Social Security will not disappear, but it'll probably drop to 79% of the benefits. I can't imagine politicians allowing that to happen. They know that we vote, so I don't expect that to happen. And so I often encourage the folks to assume that it's going to be there. But that is a question. Have the baby boomers saved enough? And what about the Gen X? What about the millennials? Have they saved enough, or are they saving for their retirement? What's the future of our pension plan replacements, like the 401k that many companies have? How about individual retirement accounts, the IRAs? We'll talk about those. Will retirees have sufficient funds for health care and nursing home care? We'll talk about that. And then I want to end with some possible solutions as we go along. So as we talk about the current situation, let me quote from the recent article in the Washington Post: saving Social Security and Medicare now seems hopeless. And that was in June. It seems even worse now because you don't see any political will to solving Social Security and Medicare. The Forbes magazine said there's an incredible amount of overconfidence out there based on the erroneous assumption about what life will be. After retirement, many people may be in for an unexpectedly rough ride when the realities of retirement set in, and that's from Forbes. But if you don't believe Washington Post and Forbes, let me give you a solid reference that will convince you. This is from the Daily Progress. I'm sorry. By 2030, one in five Americans will be of retirement age, and most of them won't have the financial means to pay for their erstwhile golden years. And that goes back to whether Social Security will be sufficient, even if it's not reduced. So let me think about the joys of retirement for our parents. They had a nice pension, and so they were able to take cruises or sit back and relax and do what they wanted to do, whether it's reading the newspaper, whatever, or visit with their grandkids to Monticello. That's 5 of my 11. So, and they had a gold watch, a pension. At 65, they could sign up for Social Security and Medicare, and they had no mortgage. That's what it was. Let's look at what it is today. If you look at today, 11% of private sector businesses employees have a defined benefit and a defined contribution plan. The defined contribution plan are the 401ks, or in the academic world, 403bs, where you put in some money, and sometimes the employer puts in money, sometimes as a match, sometimes just puts it in. The defined benefit are the pensions based on the number of years you worked and your last salary or last 3 years or average of your last five. So only 11% have both of those in today's world, and only 2% have what your parents had, a defined benefit plan where you knew what your pension was going to be based on what your salary and your number of years you worked for that organization. Not only that, the defined benefit plan generally went up with inflation. We haven't had a problem with inflation for a while, but some of us are old enough to remember the 70s and early 80s, and right now it's controlled, but who knows how long it's going to be. But as I said, you signed up for 65, but that's not true anymore. Today, based on the changes that were made to Social Security in 1982 under President Reagan and Alan Greenspan, they moved the retirement from 65 up to, for the youngest workers, 67. So the year I retired, it was 66 for what's called full retirement. Actually, you get more if you wait to 70, but they call 66 to 67 now for new retirees. Full retirement. So you got to wait for that. Yes, you can still sign up for Medicare at 65, and I strongly encourage folks to do it. But what's interesting is the average for taking Social Security is not the full retirement age of 66 to 67, but it's 63. So people are taking their Social Security earlier than full, and when you take it early, of course, you don't get as much as if you would have waited to full. So it's not like our parents. And how about no mortgage? 44% still have a mortgage. They still have a monthly payment they have to make to the bank when they retire. 2.8 million still have student loans, either their own or their kids' student loans that they're signed up for and having to pay. 75 and older have more debt than they had before the crash. And everybody said after the crash, people would deleverage, they would get less debt, they would pay it off and be more cautious. Debt levels for retirees have gone up, many cases because they don't have sufficient funds to retire. And over half of the folks today, over 75, have debt, whereas in 2007 it was less than a third. So it really has increased. So let's talk about the overconfidence. And one of the things I want to mention is that, as I said, most people, the average folks take out Social Security at 63. Most folks think they're going to work far longer than that. A study at the University of Michigan found that folks that said they were going to retire at 69 end up retiring at 65, which means that they end up retiring before they build up all of their savings, before they had time to build up their 401k, before they were able to get full retirement at 66 or the max Social Security at 70. Gallup poll found that folks 50 to 64 expect to retire at 67, but they really retire 63 or earlier. And why do they retire early? Sometimes it's because of health. Sometimes it's because of downsizing. And one of the things that we have found is it's tough to get a job when you're 50s or 60s. The one thing I tell employees is if at all possible, don't retire in a down year. And one of the things that we saw after the crash in 2008 is people did try to work longer, and so the retirement age went up for a while. It's dropped again, but Still, what often happens is people retire far earlier than they hope to or plan to, which puts them into a bigger bind. Because the longer you work, not only the more you can save, but the longer time that you have for interest and dividends to build up your savings. And as many of you remember, once you got a significant amount of savings, it started going up at a faster rate because of more interest and more dividends on a larger dollar amount. So as I said, one of the solutions is to work in retirement. And if you look at folks that are before retirement, so the 68% that you see there are workers, so they're not yet retired. 21% thought that work would be a major source of their retirement. I forgot I have a nice laser I can use. So 21% thought it would be a major source. 46% thought it would be a minor source, so a total of 68. But now look at retirees, what actually happened. Only 9% were able to work in retirement and as a major source of funds, and only 17% for a minor source of funds. So again, my overconfidence comes into play, and if you don't save and you think, well, I'm just going to work, it doesn't happen, or the job that you end up with isn't paying that much, so it's not a major source. So it's 68% think that's going to be a source of income in retirement, but only 26% it actually is. So this is the statistic that comes out every year from the Employee Benefit and Employee Benefit Research Institute, and they did how confident that they will be able to retire comfortably. And if you look at the total numbers, 64% think that they'll be able to either somewhat or very confidently retire comfortably, which means that 36% aren't confident. But look at the very confident. It's been dropping since 2015. Even though the market's been going up, even though they've seen their 401k balances go up because we've had some good years, the confidence is dropping. And let's hope that they would start saving more, but we have not seen that yet. But one of the things that most folks get burned on, or many folks do, is health care cost. Everything from co-payments, co-insurance, the gap insurance that many of us bought to supplement our Medicare, deductibles for doctors, hospital visits, the premiums that you have to pay for Part B and Part D of Medicare, the doctor's visits and the pharmaceutical, and then the cost of the drugs themselves. Fidelity estimates that somebody 65 and older will spend $280,000 for health care in retirement. And that does not include long-term care costs if you end up needing long-term nursing or end up in a memory-assisted unit or the like. Are there solutions for that? And one of them that you'll hear often is health savings account, which I'll talk about later because they are wonderful, but you have to get those when you're working. Let's look at long-term care. Only 51% of retirees think they have sufficient money to cover nursing home and long-term care, and one of the things that shocks people is Medicare does not cover long-term care. It comes out of your pocket or your kid's pocket. And in Charlottesville, the average as of 2017 for nursing home care is $79,000. It's cheaper if you stay in your home and have health care workers come in. That's in the mid-$50,000 range in Charlottesville, so it's expensive. And the other thing that, to me, is worrisome is the cost of long-term care has been going up faster than inflation. And the Having people come in to help you has been going up at 4% per year. Home health aides going up 4% per year. Adult day health care has been going up by 3%. Assisted living has stayed fairly constant, but having folks come in has been going up faster than inflation. And if your savings are not earning more than inflation, that can come back to haunt you. So do retirees need long-term care insurance? That's an interesting question. The Wall Street Journal once said, if you have $400,000 or less in total savings, that includes your home equity, your savings accounts, and the like, if you have less than $400,000, you probably don't need it because you're going to end up in Medicaid at some point because you're going to use it up at $79,000 a year. It'll go fairly quickly. If you have more than $2 million, then you could cover it. I argue that it's still useful in that it's a way of ensuring what your beneficiaries are going to get. Because if you have long-term care insurance and end up in assisted living or nursing home or a memory unit, you're, by using the long-term care insurance, you're protecting your estate to pass on to your beneficiaries. So in some ways, it's not only protecting you, but it might also benefit your kids or whoever your beneficiaries are. In 2018, the new study came out of households in 2017, 25% of workers have no retirement or pension plans. If it's even scarier when you look at folks 60 or older, 18% of them don't have a retirement or pension plan, so they're going to have to rely on their own wit. And as I said, 40% of non-retirees think their retirement savings is on track. I mean, 60% are not. And then of 60-year-olds, it's 49%. So this is going to be fun because there's a little quiz. 60% of non-retirees, according to the Federal Reserve, have little or no comfort in their ability to manage their own investments in 401k or IRAs. So we've moved to a ownership society where they have to take care of your own retirement because Social Security won't be quite enough, as I'll show in a minute. But 60% don't think they can do it. And less than half failed a financial literacy questions correctly, and so I'm going to give you those questions just for the fun of it. So the first one is true and false. House prices can never go down. We all learned that the hard way in 2008. This was 2017. 40% thought that house prices could never go down. Have they been paying attention? True or false? Buying one company stock is safer than buying a stock mutual fund. Only 46% got that correct. It's because, as many of us know, when you buy a mutual fund, you're buying a lot of companies, and not all of them will go down at the same time, you hope. But whereas if you have one company and it goes bankrupt, there goes your whole savings. So at least have two companies, so you only lose half. But anyway, with a stock mutual fund, you have multiple, and it's called diversification. You diversified your savings. Which has the highest long-term return? Stocks, bonds, savings accounts, or precious metal? Only 40% got that right. Stocks is the right answer. If you earn interest at 1% and you have inflation at 2%, after a year, we have more or less money. You'll have less, but only 62. So at least 62% of the folks got that one right. And then the last question. At 2% annual interest, after 5 years, will you have more or less than $102 if you invested $100 and had 2% annual interest? And again, more folks got that right, but still 29%. Got it wrong, which is scary. If you don't have that basic knowledge, how can you do your own 401k? How can you do your own IRA? All right, so let's talk about Social Security. So Social Security is often thought as our pension plan, but really it was designed as an insurance plan because, as was quoted by one of the politicians in 1935, old age poverty was rampant. And of course, that was the middle of the Depression, so everybody was suffering, but older folks even more so, because you couldn't get a job as a healthy, active worker, let alone as a senior people. So we have Social Security. And what made it work is that it was set at 65, but the life expectancy in 1940, at least, was 57 for men, 61 for women, so most folks didn't live that till retirement. And you had 159 people contributing to Social Security to every retiree that was drawing from Social Security. So you had a huge number of folks that were putting money into it. In 1982, the last time they changed Social Security dramatically to try to save it, when they raised the retirement age from 65 up to 67 for the youngest workers, the life expectancy was 71 for men and 78 for women. But notice, no longer do we have 159 folks for every retiree. Now we're down to 3.15. 2018, people are living much longer, and we have fewer workers, and that number is going to continue to drop as the number of retirees is going to increase, because we still have the baby boomers. The youngest baby boomer is 54, so that person is going to retire in the next 10 to 15 years, next 9 years if they continue at today's rate. So when I say 83 and 87, if you're 70 today, so these numbers are at birth, but if you're 70 today, your men are expected to live to 89 on average. So this is the middle person. If you take a million of them, the 500,000 will die before 89, 500,000 will die after 89. For women, it's 91. So you still see women are living longer than men, but we already knew that. So how does our Social Security compare to other countries? Here we are, way down here, United States. It's designed to replace about 37 to 38% of pre-retirement income for the average person. And so what I ask when I do seminars, can you live on 37% of your pre-retirement income? If not, start saving. On average in Europe, or the developed countries, it's about 53%. And of course, Netherlands, Spain, Austria, Luxembourg, it's 70% or higher. Again, going back to my theme of overconfidence, if you look at workers, 86% think that Social Security would be a major or minor source of income, but in reality it ends up being 91%. But what's scary for me is that 36% of workers think it's going to be a major source, but in reality for most folks it's 67%. So why is that scary? It's scary because it's designed to replace about 37 to 38% of your pre-retirement income. For high-income folks, it's a smaller percentage. For low-income folks, it's a higher percentage because of the minimums of Social Security. And so these folks, whoops, hit the wrong button. These folks are expecting Social Security to be a major source, but they're not worried because they figure they've got all kinds of other sources of funds. But in reality, it ends up becoming a major source, and that's and that's a much smaller than the percentage of their pre-retirement income. So it's, to me, that's a scary thing. So what's the averages? The average retired worker is average for all is getting $16,848 average. Some folks are getting far more than that. Some folks are getting far less than that. But then once you subtract out Part B premiums, which are required for Medicare, the average is $16,808, and minus Part D for pharmaceutical coverage, you end up with about $14,500 or about $1,200 a month. For women, it's worse. Women, because of the discriminatory system, no, it's because they tend to earn less while they're working, and they do tend to have time off for children and the like. And so they end up with a smaller dollar amount, and so instead of $1,200, they end up with less than $1,100 a month, and they tend to live longer, so they've got to live on that for a longer period of time. And then to make it interesting, 50% of the Social Security recipients pay taxes on their benefit. As you know, part of it is exempt, and even when you are paying taxes, 15% is exempt from taxes. But so you got to pay taxes on some of that, or some do. So what are some of the solutions that have been recommended for Social Security? And AARP has probably done the best job of showing the pros and cons, because every one of these decisions has an impact. Simpson-Bowles, deficit reduction of about 8 years ago, came up with an approach of raising the retirement age and making some adjustments to the inflation indices. But so one approach is to eliminate or raise the cap. Right now, if you're earning more than $128,000, you don't have to pay Social Security on the higher earnings. And if you think about it, well, is Social Security a retirement account, or is it an insurance for folks that didn't save enough, for the disabled, for the widows? If you argue it's an insurance policy, then you could justify raising the cap on when you have to pay for Social Security, the FICA cap. If you argue it's a pension plan, then you say, well, if I put in more, I should get more, but the max is already set, so I'm not going to get more, so that's controversial. Raise the retirement age. We're living longer. We're healthier than our parents and our grandparents were, so we could work longer. But what about the folks that are doing manual labor who can no longer work because of injuries or because it's just, as we all know, as you get older, you get less strength, and it's takes more energy to do the things that you used to be able to do easily. Change the inflation adjustment, and there's two ways of doing that, before retirement or the COLA in retirement. Right now, the COLA is a complicated formula based on three quarters of 2 years ago, and but you could simplify it. Longevity indexing, reducing benefits if people live longer to try to save Social Security, but that doesn't help the individual. Recalculate the cost of living index, reduce benefits for high earners. As a friend of mine, who a very wealthy individual, says, why do I need Social Security? It's just a nuisance. I said, well, give it to me. But anyway, I'll take it. And you could justify that if you think of it as an insurance plan to save the starving elderly. But if you think of it a pension plan, then why should you impact high earners? And so that's controversial for that reason. Increase the payroll tax as a percentage for both the employer and employee, and include all state and local workers, and some state and local workers are not included. So that would have an immediate impact to bring in more folks to contribute, so we'd have more than 2.5 workers per retirees, but eventually you'd have to pay for it. And then I tell workers that the earlier they start saving for themselves, the better. That yes, Social Security will be around. I can't imagine the politicians having the guts to cut it, but they better start saving for themselves. So what about some of the individual retirement, the defined contribution plans that I've talked about? Let's look at the 401ks and by extension, the 403bs, which are an academic or nonprofit, similar version. Access to employee-sponsored. So this is based on ages. So the millennials are somewhere between 22 and 38 years of age, and 59% of them, 59% of them don't have access to a 403B, or do have access, I'm sorry, do have access to 403B or 401K. So these are the defined benefits, 10% of the companies have it, and 49%. The numbers differ because the earlier numbers I was describing describe the number of folks. This is the number of companies, and so you'd see a difference in the numbers, but still a significant number don't have access. And where that is a problem is this is the best time to save, because the earlier you save, the longer it has to build, the more interest and dividends you'll receive, and therefore you'll end up with far more in retirement than if you'd start later trying to save for it. Generation X, the 39 to 53-year-olds are a little bit better off. The baby boomers, who are youngest 52, the oldest 72 right today, they're slightly better off, but you still have, of the number of companies, 30% don't have any retirement plan. And if you take everybody, it's 35%. But so it's significant. Only 32% of the folk, of actual workers, have retirement plans. So what I just showed was the number of companies. Now if you look at the workers, you see it drop off dramatically, because if your company has a 401k, you don't have to join it. And many folks don't. And so that's going to cause it. And Senator Warner estimates that 40% of workers are in non-traditional long-term employment jobs, contingent workers, part-time workers, temporary gig employees. They don't have 401ks. I mean, so they're not even working for a company that has a 401k, because they're not working for a company. They're working for themselves. They're their own boss. So he's proposed a portable benefits plan of sorts, and there is some bipartisan support for it, but not enough to get it over the threshold. And a defined contribution plan is beneficial if you're paying taxes, because you're putting money into a plan on a pre-tax basis. Well, 40% of workers are below the requirement for paying income tax, so therefore there's no real benefit for putting their money into a 401k in their mind, because I'm not getting a tax break, so therefore they don't. So we have companies not offering, and then folks that don't get a benefit from it. The psychologists will argue that a large number of folks have a hard time delaying instant gratification, and the old marshmallow test that they did on 3 and 4 year olds. Can you sit there and watch not eat 2 marshmallows if nobody's looking, if you're promised to have more marshmallows if you don't eat them? Kids end up eating them, many of you. And you see that in all ages of folks having a hard time delaying gratification, because when you save, you're in effect giving up current consumption. You're in effect giving up buying something that you want, or taking a vacation with your family that you want to do, or buying that HD television, whatever. Many folks don't have good planning skills. They don't think long term, and they don't plan long term. And I remember how at one point I was invincible. One of my squadron mates got shot down as the wing of the aircraft was shot off. And I remember thinking, irrationally as it was, well, it wouldn't have happened to me. And if I had one wing, I could still land. No, I couldn't have. But, as young folks, sometimes we're irrational. The other thing which psychologists have shown is that if you're overwhelmed, you don't make a decision at all. Companies that offer a large number of choices in their 401k, people just say, well, I can't make a decision, I'll make it later, and they don't. And companies that reduce the number of mutual funds that they offer, the participation rate goes up and the savings rate, the contribution rate goes up. People get overwhelmed, and our natural tendency is to back away. And in this case, you don't want to do that. So we're going to have hold all the questions at the end because it's podcast, and we'll have microphones go around in a minute. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah, but inertia and procrastination, again, people just say, well, I'll make the decision tomorrow, or I'll fill out the paperwork tomorrow. And then they don't get around to doing it ever, which is a scary thing. And if unsure, I'll wait. I'll think about it, and it'll come clear. No, it won't. You got to make a decision. So one of the solutions that I recommend for companies is to set up educational programs. And yes, the 401k companies do it, but I have found that by hand-holding the employees, the participation rate will go up dramatically. The contribution rate will go up dramatically. The average 401k balance for folks 55 to 64 is $71,000. These are folks almost ready to retire, and it's $71,000, which if they're going to use that on top of their Social Security, it'll add about $2,800 a year or $237 a month. That probably is not enough. Whoops, did I miss something? There it is. Okay, so boom. 401k designs, often companies will match, sometimes 50 cents per dollar, up to say 6% of your income. The company will match, or 60%. So if you put in 6% of your income into it, the company will match it at 50 cents on the dollar, so they'll do it at, in effect, 3% of your income. What financial planners recommend for most people is that they save between 15 and 20% of their income. So if you get the company match at 6%, so you're putting your 6%, if the company's doing it at 50 cents, you're at 9. So you're getting closer to 15%. But only two-thirds of employees receive the full match. And so they're not taking advantage. And I tell workers, don't miss the match, because in effect it's free money. For a dollar, your company's putting in 50 cents. So that 50 cents is yours. It's free. And yes, some companies will require you to work for 3 years or 5 years before it becomes vested and truly becomes yours, but it eventually will become yours. So I tell employees to at least do as much as the company will match. Get the full match, but only two-thirds of them do. Not two-thirds of the one I've talked to. The ones I talk to are 100%. Right. Yeah, believe that and I'll sell you a bridge. And what some companies are doing now is full match, and then they're doing an automatic rate increase. So if you start at 3%, next year it automatically goes to 4 and 5 and 6. And then some companies are increasing their match if you do it. So, and the other thing that's happening with 401ks is more and more companies are automatically enrolling you. So it gets over that question of inertia and being overwhelmed. They're saying, we're going to enroll you when you start, and then you have to decide to get out. And so if you have that classic inertia, you're stuck. You're in it, which is a good thing for the worker. So you have two types of 401ks in today's world. We didn't have it in my day, but today the employees have two types. And so you might want to talk to your kids and grandkids about the advantages of the traditional 401k that we were aware of versus the Roth, which is named after Senator Roth, the late Senator Roth from Delaware. The traditional is the one that we know about. It's pre-tax. So money that goes in is pre-tax. Your tax bracket may be lower in retirement. And so doing it on a pre-tax, you're avoiding the high tax rate when you're working, and so you're better off. The Roth, the advantage for the Roth, especially for a younger worker, is marvelous. So you're putting after-tax dollars, so you're not getting the tax break. So it might benefit the 40% of the folks I mentioned that are below, not paying any income tax because they're below the standard deduction and the like. You're putting it in after-tax dollars, but then when you withdraw it, there's no tax implication. Whereas with a traditional 401k, first of all, when you withdraw it, it's taxed, and at 70 and a half and older, you're required to take out a minimum required distribution, and that's taxed. And so by putting your money into a Roth, it's not taxed, and the minimum required distribution doesn't apply, so you don't have to take it out. And it actually benefits your beneficiaries as well, because you can pass that on to them. So it grows, more spending income in retirement because you're not paying taxes on it. It's a hedge against future tax rates, so if we have to go back and start paying higher tax rates, it's a hedge because you're in effect paying today, and no matter what they do with taxes, it's not going to impact you. You can roll it into a Roth IRA when you retire, and you can effectively contribute more if you're maxed out at the 18,000 max today. But yeah. So, the median IRA balance. There's a higher percentage of folks that have IRAs than 401ks, but the median, and I'm always using median because that's the middle number, so it's not distorted by high averages. Romney's IRA had $112 million in it because of a tax quirk and how you put partners' money in it. So it doesn't get distorted. It takes the middle person, but the in early 2015, which is the last number that I could find, the early 60-year-olds have about $56,000 in their IRA, but that'll generate $186 a month. Again, not enough to retire on. So now that I've given you some bad news, let's have some good news. Credit scores for us folks, 50 to 59 and 60 to 69-year-olds, as well as older than that, has been going up the last 7 years. You see it, lowest point was at the bottom of the stock market in 2009, and so the last 9 years it's gone up, and that's good news. More good news, consumer confidence recently is the highest it's been in 70 years. Unemployment's at a 50-year low, so we've got some good news. Good retirement news, automatic savings, 401k plans have increased participation in some companies up to 92% of the workers are participating in their 401k. 46% of Vanguard plans have an auto savings account. 58% are using professionally managed accounts, sometimes called target date or retirement date plans. Many plans have automatic increases, and so that's increasing it. And the median savings rate is 6%, so it's gone up. And plus the employer contribution, which averages about 4%. So the person's saving today on some of these plans are now at 10%, so it's pretty close. You have some troubling news. Mortgage balances are growing, and I showed you the folks over 75. Personal saving rates dropped a little bit this year. Auto lending has increased. Total household debt is higher than it was before the crash. And troubling news, 58% of Vanguard's retirement plans are male. Why is that troubling? Because men only make up 53% of the workers, which means a large number of women are not able or not participating in 401ks, and that's worrisome. Some of the solutions: plan ahead, calculate the retirement, save more, work longer, downsize, let your children borrow to cover their own college education, because they can borrow, but as a retiree, you have a harder time borrowing. Wait till 70. Don't cash out your 401k when you leave a job. A lot of folks do, which is, in effect, cutting off the nose to spite your face, contrary to what my mother told us. Be cautious in borrowing from your 401k, because A, you're not earning on it, and B, you're going to end up having to pay it if you leave the company. And as I said, I love health savings accounts because of the tax savings. When you put the money in, it's pre-tax. The earnings on it are tax-free. And then if you use it in retirement for medical expenses, it's tax-free. So it's better than a 401k. If you're already retired and you don't have enough, what should you do? I like reverse mortgages if people are desperate. Downsize, work, cut back, find some way. So let me end with the policy solutions, perhaps. At some point, we've got to modify Social Security, and I don't see any political will for doing that today. But again, given that we're working longer, given that the trust fund's going to run out at 2034, we're going to have to. I would argue educating the employees, helping them get comfortable making the decision, helping them get over their own inertia, their procrastination, their feeling over being overwhelmed. Less complicated, make it simple, and people will participate more. Tax credits rather than deduction. Those 40% that are not paying income tax, if you gave them a tax credit where they actually got money, even if they're not paying taxes, it would be beneficial. So you would encourage more low-income folks to contribute. And then perhaps, and there's a Retirement Enhancement and Savings Act that's in Congress today. It's got great bipartisan support, but I don't see it moving very far. But at least a lot of folks are getting behind it. Groups, retirement plans, so you can get a lot of small businesses that think 401ks are too complicated for one company. If you allow them to work together, it reduces their cost. Automatic savings features in the 401ks, mandatory plans, lifetime income of sorts. So let me open up for questions. As I said, we're going to have a microphone on this side and on the other side. So wait for the microphone to come over. There's one right up here in the blue shirt right there.
Median, and there may be a number of us that live significantly longer than we expect.
Absolutely.
And are there ways to ensure or cover those, that longer life expectancy? And what do you recommend for that?
Boy, that's a great question, because we often do live longer than we plan. And one of the things that I like a lot, and they're called immediate or deferred immediate annuities. And one of the things that I've used for some clients is to buy an annuity that starts at age 80. It's not as expensive as if you buy one for starting at 70. So you buy them now, and then at 80 or 85 or 90, whenever you set it up, it pays an annuity for the rest of your life, no matter how long it is. And I think annuities play a very important role. In the academic world, we had Teachers Insurance Annuity Association, and there one of the choices was an annuity that had a guaranteed increase over the years, and many of us purchased part of our retirement money in that so that we know it'll last forever. One of the hesitations of individuals is, well, I don't want to do that because what if I don't live to 80? And so I never get an advantage for it. And that's correct. But you're buying insurance. If I buy auto insurance, it doesn't pay off unless I have an accident, but I'm not going to run out and have an accident just to collect. So that is a reluctance. The other thing I think about annuities, just like I do long-term care insurance, is in effect you're protecting your kids sometimes. And I told a joke earlier, I've got four kids, and I told them that I'm going to spend all my money. When I run out, I'm going to sell the house, and I'm going to spend all that. I'm just going to travel and just have a good old time. And I'm going to move in with each of them for 3 months. Because there's four, so 3 months at a time. And the oldest said, oh, great, a build-in nanny. The next one said, oh, that's great. And the next one said, oh, build-in au pair. And I said, I don't speak Swedish. And she said, we'll waive the language requirement for you. And the last one looked at me, you're kidding, aren't you, Rich? Yes, I'm kidding. But so annuities are, and I make a distinction. I should have emphasized it a little bit. I talk to immediate or deferred immediate. I don't like variable annuities. Often they have an insurance product, and they have high fees, and they have a high withdrawal. If you decide not to invest, decide that that's not the best plan for you, there's a high withdrawal fee. And whereas the immediate annuity or the deferred immediate, I think, have some real very value. Have you seen any other approaches that you like, Joel?
I was thinking of the same thing, longevity insurance,
right,
is exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
The only other thing that I would think about is, are they being widely offered in 401ks or IRAs?
Very small number of companies are offering them because they're not sure of the Department of Labor regulations. And there's been a push to try to simplify it and to try to come up with something, and it just hasn't happened, or at least last time I looked ahead. Great question. Thank you. There's a question up here, and then we'll go over. Bob?
So, Rich, thanks for that really upbeat presentation.
Credit scores are going up.
yeah, but that, on the other hand, mortgage things are going up. Everything else. So back in the 1960s, when Johnson was talking about the Great Society and all those things, and Medicare started.
Yep.
I often think, by the way, how different discussions and debates about health care would be if Medicare didn't exist, because it actually functions for a lot of older people.
Yep.
But in those days, there was talk about how the fraction of people 65 and older that were living below the poverty line was just unacceptable. Despite all your gloomy numbers and things, do you have any idea, is the fraction of people over 65 living in poverty somehow better, worse than it was then?
It's far better. There are fewer folks, and actually we're the best cohort. There are fewer folks over 65 in poverty than any other age group. The folks that are the hardest hit often are the prime earners who have children. And so the extreme poverty that we had in the 30s is not there for seniors. And as you're suggesting, the homeless of over 65 is lower than any other age group that I've looked at. So you're right, Medicare is a saving grace. I haven't talked about Medicare. That's something that scares me to death, because it's going to run out of money, really run out of money, well before Social Security. And Social Security is an easy one to, in effect, solve, just as we did in 82, by raising the retirement age or changing the cap on FICA or eliminating it. So there's some tweaks that we can make, or means testing it, so that folks that have huge income in retirement don't get Social Security. So there's ways of solving it. Solving Medicare is a conundrum that I haven't figured out a solution for. And I know a lot of folks are, you know, a lot of hospitals and physicians are worried about it. Some of the advocacy groups for elderly are worried about it, but nobody's got a solution that they can get through Congress. So you're right. Poverty is not that significant. The reason we have to worry a little bit about poverty for seniors is there's not a solution as there is often for younger folks. For seniors, you don't have the strength or energy or health to work more hours, where somebody at a younger age might have the ability to go back and get a better education so they can get a better job or the like. But there's a question over here. Yes, ma'am.
What is your thought? I've heard some talk about Roths being taxed. What do you think about that? Is that going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think politicians have the guts to do it, and they would be going against what they'd promised. Now, they may change it so that new investments in a Roth might be taxed, but I can't imagine politicians being willing to go against seniors who tend to vote. So November 6th, don't forget to vote. But that's a great concern, because it is a concern, but I don't think it's going to happen. So we got one in the back, and then we'll come up front.
Okay, Rich, I'm not interested in a reverse mortgage.
Okay.
But you recommended it, and I've always been suspicious about it, not knowing a great deal. But as soon as Fred Thompson turned up on all the television shows trying to sell it, and then suddenly on other television shows and radio, everybody seems to be trying to sell it, which may be highly suspicious. So could you enlighten us on that topic?
You are very wise to be suspicious, and they have gotten better than they used to be, and I hope I said that when you're in dire straits, that might be a solution, because there's reasons not to like it. There's reasons to like it, but there's also reasons not to like it. In effect, you're giving up the value of your home from your beneficiaries and your kids, and they come with an interest, they come with fees. But for someone that has no other resources, that's one way to start taking the money out of the house without having to sell it. The other thing that I've seen some clients do is actually sell their house to their kids and then rent it from their kids. In effect, it's doing the same thing for them, but then in effect, the fees and costs are going to their kids rather than to a bank or an insurance company or a financial agency. But skepticism for reverse mortgages is very wise. They, as I said, they are better now than they were 10 years ago, as far as not having as high fees and giving you a greater value for the house. But what a reverse mortgage is, in effect, you're borrowing against your own house, but you can only borrow up to, depending on the lending institution, 70 or 80% of the value, because all of us learn that house prices can drop, and so they're protecting their collateral. And then when you die or move into a nursing home, then that loan has to be repaid. So, but you're in effect using your own money, but you're paying somebody else to do it. So the skepticism is the right answer. There's a question right here. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go over to Virginia, and then I'll come right back.
I've often wondered, how do you measure consumer confidence?
They do exactly that. It comes out of the University of Michigan, but they call a lot of folks, and I think it's 1,000 and some odd, asking them whether they think the next 6 months, that whether today is better than 6 months ago, and whether the next 6 months will be better than today. So, I mean,
what part of today? In what
terms are they
economic.
Supposed to be?
So they're just economically, are you better off now than you were 6 months ago, and will you be better off 6 months from now? So it's a simple measure, quick and easy answer. Yeah. It's a skepticism, which is wise. One of the things I taught in my classes is, it just like Reagan said, trust but verify. Always be skeptical. Yes, sir.
I wanted to compliment you for the first discussion of the rates on 403Bs and 401Ks, the contribution rate.
Right.
I have never seen a discussion as good as yours.
Thank you.
It's a subject that is almost never talked about in my experience. I was contributing to a 403B 30 years, and the amount was 10%. And I looked at it and said, where'd they get that number?
All right.
It looks like a number you just grabbed out of the air, a round number without thought. And why wasn't it 9%? Or why wasn't it 11%? It was 10. Now, as I went into retirement and I annuitized the accumulation and judged what I got out of it and compared to my lifestyle pre-retirement, etc., I judged that maybe it should have been 11, but that's a guess.
Right.
And this subject is super important. It's exactly what you're talking about. What is it like to be retired financially?
Yep.
And it's never talked about in our country. And for the first time, you are actually talking about how much the employer adds in. And you were saying that many of these plans are going to 9 or 10% by adding in the employer contribution. And I was feeling rather good. I was surprised and dismayed by your quoting some agency or organization claiming it should be 15%.
So
I think that's unrealistic and technically wrong.
Yeah, there is no right answer per se, and you see numbers from financial planners anywhere from 10 to 20%. I tend to favor the higher, and I tend to favor the higher because of the unexpected cost in retirement. But you are right. Often, in the University of Virginia, at one point, the university was contributing 12%. And in 1991, they reduced it to 11. And the governor at the time said it's going to have no impact on retirement. Well, it didn't have an impact on the defined benefit plans, the folks that were the part of the Virginia retirement system, the VRS system, because that was a promise. So whatever money they have, the General Assembly has to make up the difference. But it did have an impact on ours. And so 10% is a reasonable number. I just happen to prefer more because I'd rather have people have money to do the traveling and everything they want to do, that round-the-world cruise that they've always dreamed about. But you're right. 10 would be far better than the average, which is far lower than that. But you're right. Good point. Yes, ma'am.
Since the banks don't pay any interest on savings accounts, is there something better you should be doing with not keeping savings accounts or what?
So I have a savings account, even though I'm earning nothing on it, and actually I'm losing money on it because inflation is around 2%. So if I'm getting nothing or a tenth of a percent, I'm still behind. But I have it because I want to have something for emergencies. And if you look at the numbers today, 40% of Americans could not afford an unexpected $400 bill. So whether in my heat pump went out last year, and I can tell you it was far more than $400. If you have a fender bender, it's far more than $400. So 40% can't afford $400. So I have a savings account just for emergencies, and I know I'm losing money on after inflation, but it's just for savings. You do find the online banks pay more than the brick and mortar banks. Bank America, I think, is paying a tenth of a percent. Ally Bank is paying 1.9% for a savings account. So you're getting close to inflation. So that's the emergency money. Or emergency and travel and vacation are the three things that I save for short term. But anything else, I try to put into longer term investments. But when I say that, I always show this chart. This is a chart when I tell people to take risk. This is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is 30 companies. In December 31st, 1964, it was 874. December 31st, 1981, 17 years later, it was almost the same number. So yes, stocks return more on a long term, but a long term has got to be defined by more than 17 years, because if you get that one 17-year period of time, you can get burned. yes, you did still earn 4%, so you still got some return, but 4%. But anyway, so if you're thinking of something for long-term, then stocks or even bonds. So I've got stocks and bonds in my retirement account because I'm hoping to live to 90, and so I need something that has a higher return than inflation. And on average, it will. On average, stocks return close to 8%. On average, bonds return 4 to 5%. So I'm getting more than the short term. Yes, Cliff.
Rich, I had to do a lot of research for a friend down in North Carolina. It's home health care versus putting them in an institution. And during that research, I was astonished that 50 or 52 or 53% of the nursing home cost in this country is paid by Medicaid.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'd be interested in your comments on that, the future in Medicaid, or as a strategy on the how you keep your assets or get rid of them.
Right.
If one of the spouses has to go into care.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Medicaid, it was designed for folks that have nothing, that are in poverty. And you are correct, I'm a little hazy on the rules. The last time I looked at it, you had to get rid of your assets 5 years before. So it's something. What's that?
Each state is different.
Each state is different. Virginia used to be one of the most restrictive states. In Virginia, the last time I looked, if you had any income, including Social Security, of more than $12,000, you couldn't qualify. But Medicaid, some of the nursing homes that I've looked at that have Medicaid, I wouldn't want to be there. I really wouldn't. But there are some nicer ones. There's one right behind here, Our Lady of Peace, which has some Medicaid rooms, two per room, but or separate rooms, but they're still two per basic apartments. Yeah, but you are right. So that's planning, but at least in Virginia, it used to be 5 years. What is it in North Carolina?
I think it was a couple of years.
Couple of years. Okay. Yeah, to nothing. But if you have an income of $12,000 or more from Social Security, which the average is over that, you don't qualify. So the rules change if you become demented. So. Anyway, or when you require nursing care, so, yeah. Question in the back. Yes, ma'am.
Rich, I had mentioned earlier that I really hate that minimum distribution. Because it's not enough to really worry about, but it's significant.
Oh, sure, because you pay taxes on it.
Yeah, and any ideas on what we could be doing with that? Because it comes out for me just before Christmas, and they don't need that much, my kids.
So what one approach is change it so that you're getting it monthly, so that then you can spend it. But one of the things, if you have an IRA, it's not true for a 401k, but if you have an IRA, you can contribute it to nonprofits. And the advantage for doing that is you're contributing it to the nonprofit, and then you don't have to pay taxes on it. So it's going, and the other advantage is there are various maximums you can earn before you end up with a higher Part B or Part D Medicare premium. And so if you're close to that threshold, by contributing from your IRA directly to a nonprofit, it'll meet your minimum required deposit, and you don't have to pay taxes on it. So there's a follow-up question.
IRA is actual retirement fund coming from TIA.
Right. So those are a 403B, and that doesn't have the same rules. 401K or 403B, you're stuck. So I guess the only recommendation I would do is put yours on a monthly basis rather than having it come out right at Christmas so that you can spend it. You can roll it in, so that's a great point Joel just brought up. You can roll it into an IRA and then contribute. It still has the required minimum distribution, but you can then do the contribution to a nonprofit. And there's a great center that is developing a new center at Belvedere that would love. there's a question here first, and I'll come right up. But yeah,
I hate to bring up this rather social idea, but considering that many, many people who work as CNAs and people who are assisting those people who have no money, they have no care when they age out. And I think, I'm sorry that we have to pay more and more, but they deserve it.
Right. Fair enough. There's a question right up here, Madison.
I read something just this week. There's a government panel that is looking into RMD, to changing the required minimum distribution. In what way? I don't know. Saying you live longer, therefore you don't have to take as much, doing away with it, taxing. They're looking at every aspect of RMDs.
Super. I'll have to look at that panel, and you might be able to influence it. Super.
Is it necessary for that to pass through Congress, or is that... It is, yeah.
Yeah.
So it has to be recommended.
Yeah. Well, this has been great fun. Thank you all. And I look forward to seeing you on November 14th. So for our next one. Take care.